Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Happy Friday, everybody. Happy Brewers Outlet Day, everybody. Great to be with you. Today's show, as always on Friday, brought to you by our great friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere, wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar is indeed second to none, led by the barrels and the dills. All right. You want to stock up today. It's warm today. It's nice. Then we're going to the deep freeze. And we got lots of football this weekend. Eagles tomorrow. Okay, they'll take on the Falcons. That's the first game, 4:30. Nightcap. Patriots, Titans. At this point, it's going to be cold. And then on Sunday, you got the Steelers and the Jags at 1. While Sean is freezing his backside off at Heinz Field, you'll be in your nice warm room with your wood stove and your Brewers Outlet beverages. And then they'll follow that up by the Saints and the Vikings up at the Dome in Minneapolis. So go to Brewers Outlet. Stock up tonight. Stock up while the weather's really nice. Right? And, of course, we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. You know what? January is a great time to buy a car. Great deals. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Anytime you deal with Tom and his great staff, you're dealing with the best. All right. Penn State basketball tonight, Nebraska. That will be in the Jordan Center this evening, then Minnesota Monday night in the Jordan Center. And, of course, we talked about the AFC and NFC championship games. So there's plenty going on there. As of last night for Penn State basketball, there was no change in the status of Josh Reeves. That was the first question I asked Patrick Chambers on the show last night. So that's where we are with that. Now, Jordy Chamanga, the 7-foot center for Nebraska, evidently did not make the trip. Did not make the trip. It looks like we're going to get John Crispin on the show later today. We're going to move Tyler Smith to Monday, along with a couple of other things. But we also have Matt Fortuna on today. Matt's going to join us at 3:35. Then John Crispin from BTN and Fox will join us after that. Then my brother with picks in the final half hour. Chris Mack, Pirates Radio Network. What is the status of Garrett Cole heading into the weekend? It's warm now. It's about to get cold. But the show, we hope, is always good. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
In 103 years, there's been many firsts at Sunbury Motors Ford.
But never one like this.
SMC is selling vehicles for half price. You heard right. Sunbury Motors Ford is taking up to $15,007 off their remaining 2017 vehicles. That's a savings of up to 53%. SMC is serious about moving 67 2017 cars, SUVs, and trucks. They're slashing the price on 2017 F-150s up to $14,500. Take a whopping $8,000 off all remaining 2017 Ford Escapes. Take $7,000 off all remaining 2017 Ford Edges and Explorers. Lease a 2017 Ford C-Max Energy for only $179 a month for 24 months with zero down. That's zilch, nothing, nada. Hurry into Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury,
to be one of 67 lucky people to save 53% on your next new vehicle.
A Welcome back. Great to have you with us on the show today. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Matt Fortuna on college football in the next half hour. John Crispin on college basketball in the third half hour, 4:06. My brother and I will run down picks head-to-head with Sean coming up in the final half hour of the show. Chris Mack from the Pirates Network joins us. We're going to talk a little bit about Gerrit Cole and the dance that's going on there right now. Chris, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Gents, how are you?
All right. Let's start with Gerrit Cole. Obviously, it's a very gray situation right now, but it's obvious no matter what. They're trying to move him. Is this part of the Pirates understanding what their window of opportunity is and whether it's open or closed?
I think it's Neil Huntington doing much like he did last year, due diligence on figuring out what he can get for these big name players. Last year it was McCutchen that was shopped pretty aggressively, or at least, you know, lots of offers listened to on McCutchen. Conversations got pretty deep on McCutchen, in particular with the Nationals, and it sounds like conversations on Cole this winter have gotten pretty deep with both the Yankees and now the Astros. So, you know, I think the interesting part will be in the dominoes that fall after Cole, if any, and what the return is for Cole, because the return in both cases, when you look at the Yankees and the Astros systems, could be some major league ready players.
Yes.
And if that's the case, then maybe we're not talking about shipping out Andrew McCutchen. Maybe we're talking about squeezing the most out of his final year, because the organization feels pretty confident in the young starting pitching they have behind Cole. Or do we see some younger prospects at the centerpiece of a Gerrit Cole trade, in which case maybe that tells you, all right, McCutchen can be expected to be on his way out shortly, maybe even a Josh Harrison, and this thing's really going to be a reload for 2020, maybe.
Because the two organizations they are allegedly talking with, you and I both know they have really deep farm systems. The Yankees have replenished theirs, and the Astros have kept it at a very deep rate.
Yeah, the Astros system is intriguing, but the more I dig into it, Steve, and I've just since this morning, I've kind of started to refresh my memory on where they're at. They did give some things up at the trade deadline last year,
yep.
So they're you're right. Both organizations are strong, but there's a possibility too that, you know, when you look at, say, for example, the Astros' top prospect a year ago was Francis Marte.
Right.
Marte made his major league debut, go so hot. You can look at the outfielder who came up for them last year as well, Derek Fisher, who was one of their top 10 prospects going into last season. Had a decent debut and then called up a second time and not so hot down the stretch. So it's a little bit different, I think, in that you're starting to see the Astros system thin out a bit at the top levels. Still strong, say, at the AA level. Where you look at, you know, their number one overall prospect is the pitcher, and I'm blanking now on his name irresponsibly, Forrest Whitley, sorry.
Yeah.
So, you know, more of their talent or high-end talent, I think, is sitting at sort of that lower AAA, upper AA level, which sort of aligns with, hey, we're going to give these guys another year or two to develop. Which would align with more of a soft reboot for the Pirates.
And that very much lines up with what I've been looking at Tri-City, because Tri-City is in the same league with State College. So I've had a good long look at some of the, quote, prospects on that level at Tri-City. Fisher was one of them, by the way, at one point a couple of years ago. So you can see they've got it. They have not depleted their organization, though, to the point like the Red Sox did to make some of the trades they have, where the Red Sox are now rebuilding their organization.
It's a good point. I think it's just, again, it's going to be because the prospects are there in the Astros organization for the Pirates to get. You know, we're talking about Derek Fisher, Martes, who I brought up earlier. Those are major league ready guys who could provide an impact this year. You know, if, for example, the Pirates say they do want to go ahead and move on from McCutchen, then, yeah, Derek Fisher can play left field for you because he's got speed and power.
Right.
Marte can move to center. But that's, I think, going to be the most telling part of this, is what kind of return do they get for Gerrit Cole when and if they finally pull the trigger.
And that's where you have to wait and see, because this is also a wait and see, because the rumors were hot and heavy. It's done. Well, nothing's done right now. And that's part of it, that nothing's done. What can the Pirates – let's just go on another avenue. When you look at the current roster, what can make them better just on the current roster?
I mean, they've got to do something about third base. Going into a season planning on sort of MacGyvering one of your starting, you know, a position that should be a position of strength and power at the plate, and saying, well, we'll throw David Freese at it for 100 games, and we'll throw Sean Rodriguez at it for 20 games, and Josh Harrison for 25, and get Adam Frazier out there a dozen times, and we'll see what happens. That's the biggest hole on this team right now. And the fact that, you know, a couple of years ago, that was a position of not just steadiness, although we all saw what happened with Pedro Alvarez, the arm and the glove towards the end, but it was a position of power.
Right.
And they don't have that. And as Major League Baseball, the number of home runs continues to rise across Major League Baseball, well, now you've got to deal with the fact that you're hitting just as many as you were a couple of years ago, and everybody else is hitting more. And they don't have that anywhere in their system. There is no big power bat anywhere on the Major League roster or in their system, really, unless you go all the way down to Bradenton, that you can look at and say, yeah, okay, this is going to be the big bopper in the middle of the lineup. Josh Bell is it. Josh Bell and Andrew McCutchen, as long as he's still here.
All right. What about it? His name's been brought up so many times, and I'll be honest with you, Chris. I mean, the number of times I've seen him, he's not lit me up when I've watched him. But maybe I picked a bad week to see him, or, you know, a couple different times. But Austin Meadows, is this kind of like a let's get it going here or not time for him, or are they going to be very patient with him?
I think it's got to be for him the year where he proves that he's figured out AAA, and I don't know if he's had enough time there to prove that he's
may
figured
not have.
It out.
That's
you
a
know?
Good point. May not have.
Right. So I think first and foremost, he's got to stay healthy. If he's not healthy, that's going to be the biggest red flag. If something pops up in the spring or even early on, and really at any point, if we see one of those, you know, hamstring injuries or something else that keeps him down for more than 3 weeks, then, you know, what does that mean for this guy? It means we've had multiple seasons interrupted by lengthy injuries now. If he does stay healthy and does play the majority of the season, it'll depend on what ends up happening with McCutchen, and that could happen at several points. That could happen in the next month. That could happen in July. But it really is for him. He's got to show that he can play every day at the AAA level, be productive there, because he was off to that slow start last year in Indy. And then once playing every day and being productive, the next step will be, okay, show us that gap power that we know you have, the gap-to-gap doubles power, warning track power that we know you have at the very least, can maybe someday grow into a 20-home-run hitter at the Major League level. And I think that's a big question mark with him. That's a really big question mark. We know he can play the field. We know he can hit. We know he's got a solid approach at the plate. But can he turn some of those doubles into home runs someday? And I think we're still probably a year and a half, 2 years away from seeing whether that can happen or not.
Well, all I know is that we've been hovering near zero for days. It's got a little warmer today, and it's just fun to talk baseball in January.
Yeah, it kind of felt like March for a couple of minutes, huh?
For a couple of minutes. Now, the next 2 days it will, and
That's true.
We'll get a stark reminder on Saturday and Sunday that it's still January.
yeah, unfortunately it's still out there, isn't it?
Yeah, it sure is. But you know what? Pitchers and catchers will be reporting in just a few weeks. Now we can start feeling
about
it.
About a month, yeah.
Always enjoy it, Chris. Thanks so much. Appreciate your time today.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I'll talk to you soon, Steve.
All right, Chris Mack updating us on the Gerrit Cole situation. We'll see. I mean, you're looking for prospects. You're talking about two organizations between Houston and the Yankees that appear to be the front runners that have a depth in their organizations in terms of minor league prospects. It's interesting. Some people said, well, you know, the Astros now are, you know, they used some of that, you know, last year. They didn't use a lot of it. Remember, there are franchises like the Red Sox that have used a lot of their minor league depth to make deals for years. The Astros have only done it once. So while, yes, they traded prospects for example, a Justin Verlander, they still have plenty of depth in that organization. Now, you mentioned Derek Fisher, for example. Derek Fisher has been okay for them. When I saw Derek Fisher at Tri-City, I thought he was going to be, again, I always evaluate guys in the minor league level, like, can they get to double A with relative ease? I've never once projected a guy to the major leagues. Never. I mean, the best pitcher I ever saw in a game against State College was Kevin Gausman of the Orioles. And he had just come out of LSU. And he just absolutely toyed with those guys. Toyed with them. But again, same thing with him. I did not project Kevin Gausman to the major leagues. I said, that guy's going to double A and it's not going to take long. I do that with all the Williamsport prospects. When it comes to the Phillies organization, I always take a look at them. Who's going to get the double A? Because I feel double A is the make or break level in baseball. You know, that's the one where if you can break through that ceiling, get yourself to triple A, you've got yourself in the way. Because at this point now, the talent has really closed up. And that's why I look at, I look at as a player moving through. I thought Derek Fisher, for example, boom, I said, that guy's going to double A in the Astros organization. You could see it. Played against the Spikes in the New York Penn League Championship Series. Just a really good player. Now he gets to the major leagues, and at the moment, he's like their fourth outfielder. Okay, well, that's where he is. So, you know, guys can look like great prospects at one time, and then, you know. It's interesting. I always feel like, for the most part, like prospects sort of work out. All right. Penn State, Nebraska coming up in the Jordan Center tonight. It looks like Jordy Chimanga is going to be out for Nebraska. There's been no change in status for Josh Reeves. I asked Patrick Chambers that direct question last night on the show. I said, any change in status? He said no. So you move on. Ohio State won last night. They beat Maryland 91-69. Ohio State is one of those teams where you look at them and you say, you know what? They're better than you thought they were going to be. Kata Bates-Diop had a big night last night at 26. And Jordy Bohannon had 29 last night. Iowa finally got its first Big Ten win as they overcame a 20-point deficit and beat Illinois in overtime last night in Champaign, 104-97. So that was a big win for them. I thought he's been pretty good for Ohio State. It's been Andrew Dockage, Dan Dockage's kid. He was going to transfer from Michigan to Quinnipiac, where he was going to be with Isaiah Washington at Quinnipiac. And then he was able to somehow get himself a U-turn and get to Ohio State. And he's actually played pretty well for Ohio State to this point. Plenty of players opting for the NFL draft, including several, obviously, from Alabama. They've had five players now opt for the NFL draft, including Minkah Fitzpatrick. Fitzpatrick is really a heck of a player. Many feel he's a top five pick. Bo Scarborough also opted. Calvin Ridley opted. Harrison opted and so forth. Paris Campbell, though, is going to stay at Ohio State, and Draymond Jones is going to stay at Ohio State as well. All right, today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere, wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar, second to none, led by the barrels and the dills. We'll come back to the Sunbury Motor Studio in a moment. Next half hour, Matt Fortuna, then John Crispin here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us today. Today's show, the Friday edition, brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere, wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar is absolutely second to none, led by the barrels and the dills. From The Athletic, it is great to welcome back with somebody we consider an old friend. It's been great on this show so many times, and that is Matt Fortuna. Matt, great to hear you again, my friend.
Hey, thanks for having me, Steve. How you doing, buddy?
Doing really well. Well, let's get to the last item you wrote about, and that was yesterday, where you were discussing the future, what it holds for Alabama and Georgia football. You've taken a long look at them, especially after the national championship and how they're built. Are they both? Now, we know Alabama is, but you think Georgia's built for the long haul with Kirby Smart?
I do. I think you need to look no further than the number one recruiting class in the country, which resides in Athens, Georgia right now. And even last year when they went 8-5 and had kind of an underwhelming debut season under Kirby Smart, they still pulled in the number three class in the country. And so when you look at all the turnover in the SEC, particularly in the SEC East right now, I don't think there's a program currently that's in better position to annually contend for conference crowns and to potentially challenge Bama year in and year out, at least in the near-term future, better than Georgia right now.
Right, so now you have to go with the others around it. I'll get to that in a second. How impressed were you by, and even though they both made freshman mistakes, but to see two true freshman quarterbacks out there, Tua for Alabama and obviously Jake Fromm for Georgia, in that stage perform the way they did at times?
It was incredible, and if you want to take that a step further for Alabama, but by the end of the game, you know, the game-winning touchdown was obviously a true freshman, but their leading rusher was Najee Harris, a true freshman. They had to put in a true freshman left tackle in Alex Leatherwood after Jonah Williams went down in the third quarter. And two of their other top receivers were true freshmen as well. And I thought my boss, if you will, Stu Mandel, kind of hit the nail on the head when he wrote after the game, "College football, this was your chance to knock off Alabama, okay? Clemson delivered the first punch last year. Auburn delivered the second punch in the Iron Bowl this year, and Georgia was going in for the kill and just couldn't get it done. And now you wonder, with such a young team and with a team that's as coached as well as anyone and that is always as talented as anyone, when will this reign end? It doesn't look like it's going to happen anytime soon. It just looks like Alabama's going to get better and better. This was probably the worst team talent-wise of the five championship teams Nick Saban has coached in Tuscaloosa. And they still ended up as the best team in the country. So the going is good right now in Tuscaloosa, and I think the best may still be yet to come for this program, as crazy as that sounds.
In fact, what's interesting you say that, Matt, I felt that when he was interviewed on ESPN after the game, he said, "This is the happiest I've ever been." And my first thought was, that's because you knew that this one had the greatest odds of not happening, and it did. I think, you know, he's the first one of anybody that would know it.
No, absolutely. And even, you know, at Media Day that Saturday, you know, these are two pretty, I don't want to say bland programs, but they're coached up very well to not say a whole lot to people like me and you when the red light is on. But Rashawn Evans, I thought, had kind of a telling line when he just kind of went off and said, "Look, this year is unlike anything I've ever been through at Alabama. The amount of injuries we've had to deal with, the number of close games we were in down the stretch, the number of people who were doubting us. It's just so different from the previous 2 years when they kind of marched right to the national title game without any hiccups and were expected to win both times." So clearly this season took its toll, but meant a lot more and required them to dig a lot deeper than they were used to. And in the end, they still came out on top of it. And when you add all those factors, that doesn't even account for the fact that the way they won that game, not just in overtime, but with the longest touchdown in college football overtime history, a play after getting sacked when it was 2nd and 26, and you're basically on the road, and all the momentum is pointing toward Georgia. I mean, I'd love to see what the win probability was on that very play that they won it, because it couldn't have been very high after Georgia looked like it had seized momentum of the game.
Yeah, they had five true freshmen on the field for that play. Two wideouts, Harris at running back, left tackle, and, of course, Tua. I mean, five true freshmen.
Yeah, it's insane. They always have the number one recruiting class, but they've rarely had to utilize it as early as they did this time around.
All right, so now let's get to the rest. One thing a four-team playoff affords is that you can talk about Alabama's going to be there every year. It means there's still other spots available. for you right now, Matt, in examining who's gone to the NFL, and you and I both know there are more early entries than ever. This will be the highest number of early entries ever going to the NFL draft. When you look at that, recruiting and so forth, what's that cocoon of teams that you're going to take a close look at in terms of what next season could look like?
I think Clemson's going to be right back there. We still have to wait to hear about a couple of their NFL announcements, but they're another one, especially defensively, that recruits as well as anyone in the country right now. And you have to think that the biggest barrier to them succeeding every year in winning the ACC, Florida State, is going to take a little bit of a step back with this coaching change right now. Right. So I do think Clemson's in a great position to win the ACC and make the playoff again. Another one that to me I don't think is getting enough pub, and I think people kind of think they're going to go away after a great year, is Wisconsin. I mean, they returned virtually everybody from their 13-1 Orange Bowl winning team. They were 6 points away from winning the Big Ten, making the playoff, and you know, as an extension of that, keeping Alabama out of it. And they bring everyone back, and if Alex Hornibrook can build off that Orange Bowl, I think that's going to be a very, very dangerous team again that has a chance to win the Big Ten and make the playoff. So those are two teams, I think, that you can't rule out in Georgia as well, especially offensively. I know they lose those running backs, but DeAndre Swift and Elijah Holyfield, I think, can step right in behind a veteran offensive line with four returning starters. And obviously what's going to be now a veteran quarterback in Jake Fromm, who's only going to be a sophomore. I think Georgia's going to be right there as well. So it seems like every year that the usual suspects with maybe one party crasher. This year that was obviously Georgia. Last year it was Washington. I wonder who it's going to be next year. I think Wisconsin has a chance to be that team. But I do think a lot of the teams we're used to seeing up at the top are going to be competing for that playoff spot again.
And in November, Penn State will see Wisconsin in Beaver Stadium. So, I mean, Wisconsin's going to have a couple more hurdles to clear, because one of the first things I look at, and I know you look at as well, when I'm looking at conferences, you already know how the divisional setup is. I always like to see what are the crossover games. That indicates to me what kind of road you have. And Wisconsin does have the game at Penn State as part of its road next year.
Sure. And that's going to, I think, you know, it's going to be a great opportunity for them, for either team really, to get a marquee win from the other division. And I think it maybe helped if Wisconsin were to win, take them a little bit more seriously. I don't think they ever were seen as a threat in the nation's eyes, maybe until they won that Orange Bowl. I think even the general consensus I was getting from the nation when they lost to Ohio State was kind of good riddance. This team finally got exposed. And I don't think that was really fair to them. I mean, it's not their fault that their crossover opponent this year, Michigan, was not very good. That BYU on the road, which normally is a very tough non-conference game, ended up not really holding up stuff. But next year, absolutely, when you have to go to Happy Valley in November as well, that's certainly going to put a bigger target on your back. And you have to think the West is only going to get better, especially with a guy like Scott Frost coming into his alma mater in Lincoln, Nebraska, for what's going to be, I believe, their second Big Ten game next year in early October. So that should be at least an early measuring stick for these Badgers.
Matt, how do you view the state of college football right now? Is it in a good place? Does it need improvements? Where do you look at the state of college football right now?
I'll say this. I was a little more sour going into the title game than I was coming out of it. And by that, I mean, I genuinely thought the country, or three-fourths of the country, I should say, was going to be much more turned off by an all-SEC title game than they were. But when you look at the ratings, end up being the highest-rated title game since Ohio State-Oregon 3 years ago. And obviously, good for the country for tuning into what turned out to be a phenomenal football game. But obviously, the SEC fatigue, if you will, was not nearly as strong in some corners as I think a lot of us thought it would be. So the game, you know, always can have, I think, more improvements. I think officiating, especially on that stage, was not great. I think the most alarming thing to me in the big picture is not necessarily the salaries for head coaches, but when you see $2 million coordinators now, I think that is what's going to cut into the fabric of the game and get a lot of people talking about what would it take, I guess, for a day of reckoning, and how would that day of reckoning kind of take place? You know, it's something that's unpredictable that hasn't happened before. I think you can justify an $11 million salary in 1 year for Nick Saban when you look at the economic impact he's made on that state, but I think you have a harder time justifying it for coordinators who are switching jobs every other year. And when you throw that money around and then say there still isn't anything left for the players. And I know, you know, this is a multi-layer conversation we could be going down the road with here if we really open up that conversation.
Sure.
I just think it's a shaky ground. Even Frank Beamer, I was talking to on Monday morning, he got inducted or announced for the College Football Hall of Fame and spent some time with some writers. And he, you know, he's the oldest of old school, right? Even he had said, you know, I always thought these kids got a good deal, but you see going around, the more uncomfortable you get, kind of withholding from the people who are actually on the field making plays. So the state of the sport, if you will, I think it's in good shape. It's obviously better shape than college basketball right now for a number of reasons, but I think it certainly can get better, and I'm not sure what comes next in terms of evening the playing field, so to speak.
Yet, you know, you look at it wasn't just the college football playoff that saw an increase in ratings. ESPN's bowl games were up 12%. Everyone says there's too many bowls and so forth. There's probably too many Star Wars movies, too. But, you know, there's still a popularity of it. The question will be whether people will buy a ticket to keep buying tickets. That's the key because, of course, there's empty seats. I want to ask you about UCF. Only undefeated team. They ended up sixth in the final AP poll. I think the coaches' poll said the same thing. What about the group of six there? You know, what kind of argument do they and do not have, in your opinion?
I'm not sure they have much of an argument. That said, I'm not sure how many Power 5 teams are lining up to play these guys. I mean, I think you saw UCF boosters take out a billboard in Tuscaloosa earlier this week saying, congratulations, Alabama. How about a home and home? I think Penn State's the last time Alabama's traveled for a true road game in the non-conference. So that just doesn't happen. A lot of these teams are, I don't want to say they're risk-averse, but they you know, scheduling is hard. I don't want to take away from that some of the tough jobs some of these athletic directors have. But it's just really, really tough for a UCF to get a marquee opponent on their schedule. And I look at a team like Houston last year. They were coming off a 13-1 season where they beat Florida State and Louisville. And they had Oklahoma and Louisville on their schedule, and they had a coach and a quarterback who were as popular as anyone in the country last year, Tom Herman and Greg Ward. And after they beat Oklahoma by 10 points on a neutral – well, it was in Houston, but it was a neutral site game in the opener, they reached as high as number 5 in the coach's poll. And that, to me, was telling, because I think if the stars are able to align properly for you where you have a great team and you have a great schedule – I think you have a chance. Now, Houston obviously went 4-4 down the stretch last year and fell off contention pretty quickly. But if they went 12-0 last year, 13-0, with wins over a number 3 ranked Oklahoma team and a number 3 ranked Louisville team that had the Heisman Trophy winner in Lamar Jackson, I do wonder what the committee would have done with them. And you've heard the committee members speak this year about UCF. Hey, we could talk about hypotheticals, but that doesn't really mean anything. We need to see them play in Auburn in the regular season, a Penn State in the regular season, whomever it may be. And they're just not getting those opportunities for whatever reason. So it's hard for them to kind of play their way into the field. I think Scott Frost had said down in Atlanta, look, I'm not arguing that we belong to the playoff. I certainly think we belong higher than 11 or 10 or whatever it was we were ranked by the end of everything because we were undefeated and we'd won most of these games convincingly. And I think he has a point. I do think, first and foremost, when you look at the turnover on the committee, you need some group of five representation there. They need a voice at the table to vouch for them, to give perspective to just how good particularly the American Conference is in relation to the rest of the group of five conferences. And I think that would be a good first step to at least get them a seat at the table, to at least make sure they're not being completely laughed at and looked over when people are going through the rankings. Because, look, you could debate how good UCF is or where they belong or whatever. I have no problem with them touting themselves as national champions because you need to drum up all the interest you can get when you're a program like this. And I think it was genius to do it on the day of the national title game because that's all anyone was talking about until the ball kicked off when you had a nationwide audience tuned in. So they're going to get a lot of hype in the offseason right now. Whether it's deserved or not, I'm not sure. But that's really all you can do right now until there are, you know, more avenues, if you will, for them to play on bigger stages and have these opportunities.
Finally, we've seen 4 years of four now. Are you comfortable with the way the playoff is set up?
I'm going to sound hypocritical. Like you said, bowl ratings are up. I'm one of those guys who watches all of them, even though I might not love all of them. If it went to 8, I'd be watching it and rooting for more games like everyone else. But I'm not sure we need more than 4, to be honest with you, from a pragmatic standpoint. I mean, I'm just not sure look, Ohio State obviously had an argument to be in, but I saw that team play. Like, they were not the best team in the country. They were not going to win at all if they got in this year. I don't even think they would have fared much better against Clemson this year than they did last year. Alabama got in and proved that they belong by winning it all. I mean, they were a phenomenal football team. I think if you look through the 4 years, TCU in 2014 might be the only one that has a legitimate argument that thinks they might have been able to win it all had they got it in. But even then, the team that got in over them was Ohio State, and they went and won the whole thing, so it's hard to argue against that. There's always going to be controversy when it goes to 8, 16, 32, you name it. I do think if there was a way to strip the conferences with their title games and open things up a little bit more and maybe start this thing a little bit earlier, that'd be great. I think we both know that's never going to happen because of all the money that's on the table right now for those leagues. So I'm actually okay with 4. But again, like anyone else, the more games the better from this fan's eyes, and I'll be watching them as much as anyone else if it does expand.
Yeah, I enjoy watching as many of them as possible. I'm like you. Matt, always a pleasure. Great to hear you on with us again.
Hey, enjoy the basketball game tonight. I'll be tuning in later.
Thanks. Matt Fortuna joining us from The Athletic. Double our ratings by getting Matt on. So he's going to listen to the game tonight. He's probably going to, you know, of course, it's on News Radio 1070 WKOK and on WKOK.com. But obviously, if he can't pick it up on WKOK.com, he'll pick it up on SiriusXM. That's where he's probably going to listen to it tonight. All right, we will take a break. Tyler Smith next half hour. John Crispin next half hour. Talk about tonight's matchup with Nebraska and about Big Ten basketball. Then the final half hour, Chris is going to jump in, and he's going to try and kick my butt in picks. We already know my brother will as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet. All right, great to have you with us. This is from my heavy metal collection.
That's what happens when I'm on the show.
All right.
I bring the heavy metal.
Suit always played It's Good to Be Me. All right, so...
wishful thinking, or...
For him, I don't know. It's just, you know... There's a lot of Sinatra stuff, you know. I was like, okay, all right, great, whatever you want to do.
Yeah. So. It's weird, like the music selections for sports, and you know, I mean obviously basketball seems to trend hip hop and whatnot, but football's been weird. Like I remember I always go by the Madden games. Sometimes they'll go full on metal and then they'll go full on hip hop, and it's weird. Like football's like in the middle somewhere. They just do everything.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. But, you know, I mean, it's interesting the marriage of music and sports. And NFL Films, I think, deserves all the credit in the world for making that marriage happen and also for getting people to say, you know, hey, wow, how about that? NFL Films did that. You know, all of a sudden the ball's in the air and they've got the you know, the symphony in the background. You're like, holy mackerel.
Yep.
And the Sables, okay, Ed Sable and his son Steve Sable, unfortunately both have passed, just had a great appreciation for the combination of what sport and art can be. They turned a sports film into art.
They created the highlight.
Yes,
the
highlight.
For them, SportsCenter would never happen if it wasn't for the Sables.
Right. Now, there isn't a single person yet that has equated this show with any kind of art. unless they decided that stick figures were art.
or that back in the day when they were drenching like Jesus in disgusting stuff, maybe?
No, I think let's go with stick figures. I think it's safer analogy. Let's just stick with that for now. All right. Next half hour is John Crispin, Big Ten Network and Fox Sports. He's calling the Penn State-Nebraska game tonight. We'll talk about college basketball with him. My brother Chris and I will run down the picks for the weekend in the final half hour. Looking forward to that.